Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from North or South, or from the East or West? My heart is filled with love for all of these. I only know I swell with pride and deep within my breast I thrill to see, O glory faint, the breeze.
Interesting birthdays, although today, in 1900, the author of Gone with the Wind was born, Margaret Mitchell, and I don't think she'd say the Union is her country. She only wrote one book, and what a success it was, and those of you, last week, I think, was Vivian Leigh's birthday, and she turned down a piece of the profits of the film. She took a play at $20,000, I think. Clark Gable was more savvy, and he took a piece of the profits, and made him a millionaire. Other birthdays today, like a lot of politicians, we've heard of Halley's Comet and what Samuel Clemens said was a fraud, something like that. Sir Edmund Halley was born today in 1646. I think this guy is black. He started the first black insurance company. These companies were called debits and debit insurance, and what people would do, what guys with insurance agents would go around weekly and collect little money from poor blacks who this money was saved up for their funerals, and they used to mark their, they had a little booklet where they marked the payment, and blacks were very poor blacks, less educated, were very concerned about having enough money for a good funeral. And this guy was born, Frank Gillespie, was born in Arkansas. One of the great English musicians, Sir Arnold Box, was born today, came from a wealthy Irish family. And, of course, it's very important for us, everyone who is following health insurance, Christian Bernard, Dr. Bernard, the first guy, South African doctor, the first guy to invent a artificial heart. I think it was in installed one in the Mormon dentist from Utah. The guy lived, I think, about 45 days. And then, let's see, who else we got? Oh, on 60 Minutes, Morley Safer, Canadian, Toronto. He was born today. And, of course, we have other Canadians who have come down to the States. The guy who was on ABC. And on PBS, which is going down the tubes, Robert McGill was from Canada, and he was on the McNeil-Lehr Report. Now it's the Lehr Report. and this famous French actor, Alain Delon. I think he was in the French Foreign Legion. And then he got tied up with, he got into French films through the bedroom, through a famous director. And he didn't live that long, but great actor, very good looking chap. And then the jockey who won the most races, 6,000 of them, Angel Cordero, was born today, and pop singer Bonnie Raitt. And the magazine that it's called Playgirl, but a lot of gays prefer this magazine. Christy Hepburn, the daughter, the younger daughter, younger child of Hugh Hefner, was born today. At my school back east, the first bunny, Bonnie Halpin, was Hugh Hefner's first bunny, and she was several years ahead of me in at the Catholic school. She died recently. And then the guy who invented, he was a linguist, I guess you could call him, certainly a scholar, Duns Scotus. He coined the phrase dunce, D-U-N-C-E, a dummy. And he was born today. And then this is typical of all the trouble we were having in Afghanistan. The king of Afghanistan was assassinated in 1933. A lot of turmoil in that country. And in that clip from the film that we recently ran a clip on, nobody conquers Afghanistan. It's just too much tribal fighting, and the people still have that tribal mentality. Plus, the dominant crop is still heroin, poppies, and that's not going to change. And, of course, I always say that the three worst things to mix with politics are race, sexual preference, and religion. And we all know what's happening with the Taliban and these Islamic fanatics who are trying to impose their will upon the Christian West. And let's see, who else died today? Another famous actor, Wendell Corey. He died today. And then all of those Americana artists, he used to work for Saturday Evening Post, Norman Rockwell, died today. And of the events, and those of us who love to swig a good whiskey, bourbon whiskey in 1789 was first distilled from corn. And, of course, Washington had to go back into the field and put down the Whiskey Rebellion, where Pennsylvania farmers, I think, didn't like the tax. And that was the last time that George Washington sent the army, went with the army to put down a drunken revolt. And then Louvre opened in Paris on this date. And then the first women's college in America, Mount Holyoke, opened. Now it's co-educational. And then Montana entered the Union on this date in 1889. And Grover Cleveland was inaugurated on this date. And then, all of again, here's some more medical news. The inventor or the discoverer of X-rays, Wilhelm Roentgen, was born today. And then we had Washington in 1910. The state of Washington was the first state to allow women to vote. Here's another one. The first black woman was elected in Pennsylvania, Cynthia Bird Fawcett. Then he had another black elected. Wilson Good was elected mayor of Philadelphia, and then also another black, Ed Brooke, Republican attorney general. He had the notorious stalker Boston Strangler case, made him famous or infamous. He was elected as a black first black Republican from the state of Massachusetts. He had an interesting background in World War II. Even though he was light-skinned black, he was he did intelligence work in Italy, and he later married an Italian and had two daughters, and then they got divorced. On this day, back to Massachusetts, JFK defeated Richard Milhouse Nixon on this date. And let's see, what else we had? This is something I'm going to bring up. George Christopher brought it up for Clinton, to Clinton, try to get him to reestablish the CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps, to help unemployed youth. And FDR started the first Civil Works program on this date in 1933. 1950, we had the first jet battle over Korea, famous jets that we had fighting with those MiGs. And then we had the first, back to women again, the first woman governor of Kentucky, Martha Lane Collins, was elected today. And then we had Ronald Reagan. I remember that election. It was a school break here, college break. Ronald Reagan was elected governor of California, and I remember first seeing the bumper stickers. I didn't quite know if Californians were anal retentive. It was, if it's brown, flush it. Of course, now Pat Brown's son is made history by being the first governor, California governor, that is, to be elected again after being out of office for 28 years. It seems that we're behaving in California like they did in the old South with some of those governors who it was like a dynasty. You had Wallace in Alabama, Lurline succeeded George, and then their son was Secretary of State, I think, of Alabama. We had Talmadge down in Georgia, and then we had another one, I think, in Kentucky, but we'll see. I think we'll be able to do better than that. And the political cognoscenti are forecasting that if Jerry Brown doesn't die in office, he will retire and then open the way midterm probably for Gavin Newsom to become governor of California. And we'll see if that occurs. Of course, a lot of things can happen in 2 years. Now, interestingly, the last California, last San Francisco mayor to become governor of California was a guy back in the 30s called Sonny Jim Rolfe, R-O-L-P-H. I think it was Episcopalian religion. Newsom says he's Catholic, but he's divorced. A few other things about him. Anyway, Rolfe was a businessman, and he was elected governor of California during the Depression, and fortunately he didn't last long. He was a cockfighter. I can't find the photo in our archives of him in the St. Francis Hotel penthouse where he's fighting cocks. These are the hens. And you see him with his big fat behind, and, you know, cockfighting was illegal in California even at that time. But he was a lousy mayor and a lousy governor, but he was also one of the longest serving. And so we'll see what happens. My friend and political mentor, George Christopher, ran against Reagan in the primary in 1965, Republican primary. He lost. Dianne Feinstein wanted to become governor, and that wasn't going to happen. So she opted and succeeded in becoming, U.S. Senator. So these are the events on November 8th, and we're going to do try this format Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Friday will be the best that we'll have some of the best of, plus the usual, historic births, deaths, and events on that day, and what's relevant, and then some more interviews from our archives, and we'll be having some live interviews, and also unusual things. We have inaugurated a new YouTube site called Swamp Fox Humor, and this is I'm an admirer of Francis Marion, the Revolutionary War general, who was called the Swamp Fox because of his tactics. He had a keen sense of humor. And this is going to be, we're splitting off our humor and other things that are light topics on another YouTube site to give it more focus. So that'll we've already set it up, so we'll be uploading some interesting animal stuff. And then we'll continue with the political facts, frauds, and fiction, and historical events, archival interviews that we've done, stuff from Western Public Radio, KALW FM, what I did in Australia, New Zealand, Canada. And so all of that stuff will be, like the Lipizzaner interview, those famous horses, will be on the YouTube site. So that'll be our Amicus, AMICUSVERITAS YouTube. And there'll be an update on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, how it's related to political corruption in the San Francisco in California court system, and the district attorney here in San Francisco, how a conviction that cost the American taxpayer $15 million, $10 million went to pay for a building to honor a illegal alien, a homosexual predator, a racist and made awful comments about Jews and blacks and other people, Ms. Juan Pifere from Argentina, and of course connected to the oldest bank in Argentina, which is suspected of receiving stolen assets from European Jews and others from World War II, and also for possibly allegedly holding assets stolen by the Nazis who came to Argentina through the Odessa line, or what was called the Rat Line. Juan Perón was the longtime dictator of Argentina, and he was the one South American dictator, and Argentina was the one South American country that supported the Axis, Hitler, Mussolini, and Tojo during World War II. And since this is the U.S. Marine Week, although it's ironic, none of my family have been in the Marines. I've been in the Air Force, my half-brothers in the Air Force and intelligence. My father was in the Army briefly in World War One. He was drafted, but it was too late to go overseas. My uncles were in the Navy, and the guy who saved my life, the European refugee from Lithuania, he was in the Air Force, and my half brother was also in the U.S. Army, and my dad signed him in when he was 17 and a half. Anyway, to salute the Marines and my best friend and legal counsel is a former Marine who served in I know a lot of these folks, honorable gentlemen, who served the country and asked not what they could get out of the country, but what they could do, even though they disagreed with doing it. So we're going to play, and since this is John Philip Sousa's, a couple of days ago was his birthday, so, and we used to play his music in marching band. I played the tuba and a string bass and violin. We had archival recordings from the radio station and the two radio stations. So here is John Philip Sousa and a salute to Sousa playing his most famous march.
Thank you.
Now, Sousa his father was Portuguese, his mother was German, and he went into the U.S. Marine Corps band. His father was also a musician in the Marine Corps band, and, of course, his first march was for the Washington Post newspaper called the Washington Post. And then when he was in the, I think it was Semper Fidelis, Always Faithful, which is the Marines' official march or unofficial march. And we have those archives from the station when I worked there. And we'll be offering some tidbits from Sousa wrote over, 120 pieces of music. He wrote an opera, operetta, waltzes, polonaise, music for the president. They didn't call him the March King for nothing. One of my favorite marches is not that well known or not played that often as Hands Across the Sea, which was when he went on his tour. And then during the Spanish-American War, he wrote El Capitan, which was actually an operetta. We'll see what we can do on that one. The this as an aside, the British March King was a guy named Kenneth Alfred, A-L-F-R-O-D, and his most famous march was the 8th Army. He wrote one for the 8th Army when Montgomery defeated Rommel at the Battle of El Alamein, 1942, and also the Bridge on the River Kwai. Of course, the film on a bridge on the River Kwai, there's some controversy about some of the depictions in that film that this is a great artistic liberty that was taken and applied to what actually happened on that horrible railroad that the British and Australian, New Zealand, I don't know if any New Zealanders were there, but POWs were in forced labor. The Japanese were just brutal. I'm going to be bringing up one of my favorite wars from a historical point of view is the Russo-Japanese War of 1905, and there is an interesting connection to San Francisco and the Russian Navy and a few other things, so we're tying that all together. We did set up back in 1997 to assist Steve Nary, the Arkansas youth who was stalked, lured, drunk, and raped and railroaded here in San Francisco by corrupt Juan P. Ferre and his friend, the district attorney, Helen M. We set up a thing called Free the Sailor to pay for his court filings and copying of court cases, over 2,500. And I've been asked to put that on disc, which we're doing. And the postage and all that sort of thing. So Free the Sailor was set up as a legal defense fund, so we'll be discussing more on that. And you can email me at pverzola@gmail.com if you want more information on that. And also we'll be using both our amicusveritas.org blog site and our Amicus YouTube site, and then the new site that's going up, which is mostly for fun and miscellany and animal and environmental humor, that sort of thing, kind of light. excuse me. Now, we've got political karma mentioned on today's show, the scheduling, and it seems that there may be the pendulum on this, what I call crotch politics, this business of sexual preference injected into the workplace, the pulpit, the schools, government, the media. It doesn't belong there. Sexual preference should be something that is private and respected as private. What consenting adults do in the privacy of their home, their apartment, should be respected. They shouldn't bring that agenda across the threshold of their domicile. And I remember at Western Public Radio, my mentor, Leo Lee, who also worked as the press secretary for California Governor Goodwin Knight. He started Western Public Radio to train producers and people to do radio engineering. And he worked at the old San Francisco Chronicle, and he started his own newspaper. He was a rewrite man. But the one thing he said at Western Public Radio, leave your S, your political S, outside. When you come in here, you come in here to work, to be a radio person, an engineer, producer, that sort of thing. But you don't bring your political agenda into my Western Public Radio. And I think that's a very good admonition, and this is the unfortunate thing that we see with these people. I understand that Keith Olbermann has now come out of the political closet. He says he's a socialist, so that's his privilege, but he has a right to be heard, but we have no obligation to listen or to heed. So keep that in mind. That same goes for everybody else, too, that people should have the right to be heard, but we have no obligation to listen and heed. We'll be saluting the Marines and our military personnel and our veterans. I'll see if I can get Art Burnclaw. He's been very ill. He's also, since we were on baseball last week, he was also, he worked in baseball with Ted Williams during the Korean War. Ted Williams, I think, also went into the Army and served, and there was that interruption in his baseball career with the Boston Red Sox. And as George Christopher said in last week's interview, that San Francisco, he had tried and they wanted to get the Boston Red Sox here, but that was not possible at the time, so they got the Giants instead. Also, there's an interesting aspect that both, and we'll bring it up in a near future show, the two characteristics and two demands of the United Nations and any baseball team that wanted to move to San Francisco, and they share this one similar demand that if they were going to come here and set up shop, this had to be provided for them, and it's something so basic, and you'll find it interesting. That's coming up. So we'll end today with my favorite. In political karma, we have seen judges, the Chief Justice of the California State Supreme Court, Ronnie George. He looks like the guy in the Gecko commercial. Maybe that's his alter ego. I don't know. Anyway, he is retiring, and he was pushing this sexual preference agenda. There's now a question about one of his family sons that may be that way. San Francisco rejected this guy named Michael Nava, N-A-V-A. I think I ran into him at the California State Supreme Court during the Steve Neri filings, habeas corpus, which they sandbag. He was an attorney, a staff attorney, but he was also a pornographer. Well, he tried to become a San Francisco judge, and he was rejected by the voters. So I guess, and they didn't know about his pornographic writings, which is interesting. And also in Iowa, which picked up the gay marriage agenda from California, the three their state Supreme Court judges were ousted from the court. They were stripped of their robes, in a manner of speaking, and for pushing that agenda on the Iowa farmers. So they didn't want any of that. So we'll see you Wednesday, and here goes. What are we going to do? Here we go.
Hey, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sound?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of jacks, bet out.
Well, that's what they did Tuesday, so let's see if we're the taxpayers and the citizens are winners. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Thank you for listening. And this will remain up on the web for listening at your leisure.